Creature Culture, a podcast about the monsters, spooks, and nasty guys that inhabit your favorite fantasy settings. We're your hosts. Hi, I'm Colin, and this year for Halloween, I'm going as a video stream.
Hi, I'm Nolbard, and I'm here to remind you that this Halloween, not all of the monsters that you're going to be seeing on the streets are children.
Tonight for Halloween, we're doing a Q&A episode with listener questions.
We hope none of you are sphinxes.
I guess we don't have any news and updates for now.
We really don't.
Q&A episode though. Yep. Questions
and answers.
Oh, both? We're doing a 2-for-1 tonight?
Yeah. It's a deal. It's a holiday. We gotta be generous.
Yeah.
So, what do we have first?
Well, I do have some rapid-fire questions from an old co-host from the show, Sarah, from the Bird People episode.
Oh, that's good to hear.
Yeah. So I'm gonna go down this list real quick. first up, who is King Henry VIII as a monster?
Human, obviously.
Yeah. Well, himself. He is a monster.
Human.
I feel like, especially based on his famous portrait, most people would say boar. But that would make the fact that he hunted boar often kind of awkward.
It's not all that bad.
Yeah, I mean,
boars are pretty self-killy.
Yeah, I guess it does make sense. Like, the big kind of folly is he was like really, really athletic when he was young as king.
Right.
And he would joust all the time. This is back when you could joust as a king. You were just allowed to do stupid things like that. He took a lance, it broke and kind of lodged in him, and the wound never fully healed.
Hmm.
It was kind of perpetually open for the rest of his life.
Good lord.
It made it so he couldn't really exercise all that much, that's why he gained a lot of weight. That's why he was purported to smell bad, because he basically had a festering wound at all times.
Holy shit!
I imagine that, you know, if you're gonna make this into a Redwall-esque anthropomorphized history, having a bunch of British nobles be boars just charging at each other over and over isn't a terribly off mark.
It's really not.
Yeah. So Pigman. Good old
Pigman.
I guess an orc is what we're trying to say.
maybe an orc, or maybe like a boar minotaur?
Yeah.
Either way, he stank.
Yeah. old Stinky. God. Stinky the Eighth.
Monsters, fucking humans are the worst monsters.
question number two. What's the best golem?
Oh, geez. Meat.
Yeah, it's same. Bone also good.
Bone is good. I mean, you need bone to hold up meat.
Yeah.
I'm okay with up to, like, 20% bone.
Yeah. What does a succubus look like if there's nobody to see them?
That's a bit metaphysical, isn't it?
Well, I mean, the answer is easy.
Yeah?
I mean, it's their normal human form, but just with, like, zebra stripes on the legs, and they look like they're vaguely in a Zentai suit. Or at least that's what Catherine likes to believe.
All right. I dig it.
How many stomachs does a centaur have?
How many stomachs do horses have?
Horses have one stomach. They've got one really bad stomach.
So then I've got to say centaurs have two stomachs.
I would say they have one stomach. Because you know how, in basically every setting ever, centaurs are purported to be, like, super strong, and they can beat the shit out of anybody, and et cetera. Here's the thing, though. It's not like in those stories they're, like, kicking their opponents to death. Yeah. They're still hitting them with their normal arm weapons and bows and stuff, which means that they have to be massively strong from the human body up.
Yeah.
And their human bodies look the same as other human bodies.
Yeah.
So that means that they have to have a ton more muscles just kind of driving that, mm-hmm. which means that I don't think they have any organs in the human torso. Maybe the start of the lungs are in there. And maybe like a second heart. And that's it.
Holy shit.
Just one really long esophagus.
I can't deal with this.
And then, because, like, oh, man, horses actually have, like, honestly terrible stomachs. Like,
yeah,
the easiest way for a horse to die is to eat something they're not supposed to, and then their stomach just stops working.
Yeah. Like, they're, oh, my God.
So them having two stomachs, like, unless they're, like, a cow centaur, then maybe that starts to make sense. But, like, that's just getting...
That's a minotaur.
It's getting weird. That's a minotaur, but in the wrong way.
Yeah. Yeah. That's like a ptarmigan.
Well, no, because like a minotaur, if the bottom half was a cow, I feel it'd be more satyr-like. Mm. Because like a centaur, you're specifically taking the body of the torso of a human and sticking it on the neck hole of an animal.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, God. When you describe it like that, it's awful.
Oh, yeah, it is. That's why I hate centaurs. Jesus. As if you couldn't hate horses already. And then a follow-up question to that. Which set of boobs do centaurs feed their babies from?
I imagine the human set, just because, like, the esophagus is a little higher. Like, the centaur will, like, do that horsey city thing, and then they'll, like, feed from the human breast there. Because it'd be very hard for a baby centaur to, like, do the limbo and then get the teat breast.
Well, here's the thing. This brings up a more interesting question.
Yes.
So horses are basically fully functional, like, a minute after they're born, right?
For certain definitions of functional.
Yeah.
As much as a horse ever is.
And babies basically can't do anything for, like, a year and a half, 2 years.
I think I know where you're going with this.
Does that mean that the horse half is fully functional and just has this, like, baby form on top of it just flailing about everywhere? Or are they, like, born as, like, toddlers up top and they're just ready to go? Or is it just, like, the upper half of a baby and then just, like, this jelly horse bottom that can't really do anything for a year? And they have to, like, carry it around in a weird papoose? Because I feel like that's the determinator is, you know, the closer they are to baby, the more it has to be human breasts.
Yeah.
But the closer they are to horse, it's got to be horse breasts.
Oh, God. Oh. Thematically, I want to say they're basically born as toddler humans on fully functional.
But just imagine a tiny little fat horse bottom, like, with, like, you know, instead of having, you know, the kind of lithe and muscled legs, they're just kind of like fat little legs.
Chubby
just,
floppies.
And just, like, jelly hooves.
Oh, God. Play that out as you will, folks. Jeez.
I don't think we really answered any of those questions, but thank you very much, Sarah, for sending those in. You can find Sarah as Teeth Slut on Twitter.
Oh, I need a break. That was bad. Okay.
I'll let you read the next question or two. Right. Whatever you want to start with.
Fucking hell, man. All right. I just got a question in. What's the deal with scales describing the breath types of Dragonborn? I think that one's fairly simple off.
Yeah, I mean, it's because dragon color in Dungeons & Dragons is associated with element, which is associated with breath type.
Yes.
And, like, in preferred environment and a yes. host of other things, and that's why it's the one of the few things that carry over to Dragonborn.
Yes. However, as an interesting little side note, that was not the case in 4th edition, where they were introduced as a player race. In 4th edition, you could be any color with any kind of breath type available.
Yeah.
However, in 5th edition, they've made it a thing that, you know, it works the same as dragons.
Yeah.
So, it's two different takes for two different editions.
Yeah.
Personally, I like this one better, which is weird because usually I like having more options available. However, this is cool.
Yeah. I feel like the kind of rote, you know, your scale color equals your breath type starts to, I mean, if you're not really thinking a lot about the mechanics of your fantasy, then, like, yeah, it's fine. It's very thematic. It works for kind of, I don't know, Dragonlance kind of stuff.
Right.
But if then you start thinking about, oh, well, what happens when a red dragonborn and a blue dragonborn get together? Do they have a purple dragonborn? Is it like a 50-50 shot, et cetera, et cetera? Mm-hmm. And the whole, you know, breath type not having to equal scales for 4th edition works a little bit better for that.
Right.
And gives you a little bit more freedom to, I don't know, get a little bit more intricate in how you describe what your scales look like and yeah. don't necessarily hold you down to a particular thing.
True.
Yeah.
I get that.
But also, you know, at the same time, I wish 4th edition's breath attacks were a little more muddied. Like, instead of having a clear fire cone, cold cone, acid cone, whatever.
Yeah.
If you had a general, like, entropic, hotter, caustic-y kind of breath,
yeah.
and more energetic, lightning-y, something else kind of, I don't know, fiery, yeah. like, yeah, that kind of, like.
I actually like that idea a lot.
Yeah.
Because It's going to start a little off topic, but I really, really like the elemental damage system that they did in Warframe.
Yeah.
Where you can put different elements on your weapons and then they mix into something different.
Yeah.
I would like that with a Dragonborn. That would be really cool. Like, if you had a mixed Dragonborn ancestry, you could, you know, have, like, fire and cold would make a steam breath attack. Yeah.
I mean, especially since I feel like it's much, much more... I feel like a good comparison point are Genasi.
Mm-hmm.
And Genasi, it would make sense why you wouldn't see a lot of mixed race Genasi, because, you know, they come from differing elemental planes.
Yes.
And they usually have a kind of very tight-knit, like, family-based society,
mm-hmm.
whereas Dragonborn are... They're definitely clannish,
yeah.
But also they're supposed to be from... small, like groupings of kingdoms that mostly interact with each other and have very storied long histories. So the idea that you would have someone who could claim that, like, oh yeah, I'm pure red dragonborn, red blooded dragonborn, just seems ludicrous to me.
So what I'm gathering from this is that it's a possibility to have basically a dragonborn pre-World War I Germany because of the small kingdoms thing.
Yeah. I mean, that's what I would like. That's what I would imagine a good kind of idea for how a Dragonborn nation state might look is something where you might have like the High King of or the High Queen of Dragons, who is kind of in Austria kind of situation, where maybe they're a little larger, they're a little more settled, but then you have all of these different regional principalities of different dragonborn kingdoms, and they kind of all might like treat each other as a political block, but they're still fairly sovereign to themselves.
Right.
And even within those kingdoms, I don't really see there being just, oh, here's a big population of blue dragonborn, right. Here's a big population of green dragonborn. I can't imagine them not being incredibly mixed.
Oh, no, I have to agree. Yeah. Like, honestly, I imagine the Dragonborn Kingdom is like opening a bag of Skittles.
Yeah.
Wow, that's the second time I've used that analogy.
Yeah.
Feels good.
Yeah. And to that point, you know, I feel like you shouldn't even feel beholden to describe your Dragonborn scales in a single color. Like... I mean, I've never played a Dragonborn. I've always meant mm-hmm. to, and it's just never happened.
You don't play a whole lot in our D&D groups.
Yeah. Sadly. I mean, I used to play a lot, and then I decided to run a 2-year campaign. I feel like there's a lot of different ways that you can describe Dragonborn scales to make them different. Like, you can describe different textures, modeling, spots, that kind of thing. And definitely, I would probably, like, never describe a Dragonborn scales for a character I would make as being a single color. Like, I kind of always imagine mm-hmm. them in a James Stakoe kind of multiple colored gradient kind of thing. Where, you know, you might have a Dragonborn that's mostly blue-colored, but maybe, like, the edges of their scales take on a greenish hinge, and they have a deeper purple where they meet the flesh, and...
I think I'm crying a little. Yeah. All right.
Yeah.
You make a solid case. You make a very solid case.
And we're, like, the scales are kind of on the outermost kind of flex, and maybe getting a little white or gray as, like, the outer edges are starting to chip off or loosen.
Yeah. That's really good. I like that. So another thing I'm gathering from this is play varied Dragonborns.
Yeah.
Just let your imagination go wild. Let your inner 12-year-old design your Dragonborn.
Yeah. If anything, I feel like what would be a cooler callback to base your Dragonborn's breath attack on
mm-hmm.
Is look at the different art for, like, facial structure and build and that kind of thing for different dragons, because those are also very different from dragon to dragon.
You know,
blue dragons are famous for their big spiky lightning horn kind of thing. Yeah.
And they've got like fin things.
Yeah. And I would say make your dragonborns like definitely multicolored and use like more structural stuff like their head fins or what their horns are like or what their tail looks like to kind of telegraph what your breath attack is.
That's actually a really, really good idea and a recommendation I'm going to try and use from now on, because I'm a simple person. I hadn't thought about this stuff. I was like, color equals good. Arr!
I mean, that's all I do. I'm not good at writing stories, but I'm good at making settings.
We love you for it, dude.
That's why I started running pre-written adventures. But yeah.
All right, here's a question. What is the deal with gnolls and kobolds being associated together here lately? I think that has a lot to do with furries.
Yeah, definitely. I feel like it might be a subconscious thing too, just because I feel like there's just like pretty much kobolds are officially reptilian now.
Yeah.
Sadly. But there is
amphibious reptilian.
Yeah. And there's just enough of, they're so like fatty, like maybe tops like a gecko. Like especially like a thicker, fattier gecko, like a leopard gecko or something.
Yeah.
But still like crocodilian heads. I don't fucking know.
It's strange and I like it.
But like, you know, the old kind of doggish looking kobolds, and especially the ones the way that it's interpreted for Kobolds Ate My Baby, are definitely kind of like cute gnolls. Cute, very...
God, you're right.
Like, minimalist drawn gnolls. But, I mean, gnolls and kobolds are the big furry races.
They are. There's no question about
that. Yeah. And it's because they are... I mean, they're definitely animal races.
Yes.
They're very anthropomorphized, and they have... But they have a lot of kind of... they're very... I don't want to say cartoonish, but they're very animated.
Yes.
Without necessarily, and they avoid kind of the trope that like cat girls and stuff usually fall under, where it's just a human with some ears and a tail slapped on.
Yes, which is a very big complaint among a lot of communities. Yeah.
Which Tabaxi's a lot better about. Fifth edition in general, most of their animal-esque races have looked pretty non-humanoid.
Yes, and that's a tremendous improvement upon some other things I could mention but won't.
Yeah. I wish that I was exposed more to Henga Yokai when 4th edition was an active thing.
They were right at the end, though.
Yeah, I mean, they're around when they can dragon, too, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, so, like, I think I've maybe seen art of them, like, twice. And I only heard about them pretty much after, like, almost when like, in the meat of when D&D Next was happening. And we were still playing 4th edition, but still.
Yeah, like... And, God, because they were the perfect, perfect animal race. They could be literally anything you wanted.
I feel like the only problem with Henga Yokai is because they were supposed to be, like, very deeply rooted in the idea of a Japanese kind of animal spirit goblin kind of thing, is that there is no way you could really walk it back from the transformation stuff.
All right.
And, like, that basically, I mean, that was so... integral to like the character concept and the reason that you could have so many different animals for them, that it kind of, I don't know, if you were going to take out that aspect there for 4th edition, there'd be a huge mechanical hole left to put something else in.
All right, I see what you're saying.
Yeah, which I mean, at that point, just import a similar feature from a different race or something. I don't know.
There was enough to choose from, honestly. Yeah. But I mean, that the art for the article, that just that badass badger, that was the coolest thing. Like, my inner red wall was like, yes.
I know I made fun of Henry VIII earlier, but I have always wanted to play a boar person.
They're cool. What is the best non-kobold small race?
Well, a couple months ago, I would have said Firbolgs, until I found out they're like 7 feet tall.
Yep.
I can't say Deva, despite the fact that I did have a tiny Deva character. So I played a Deva Warlock Paladin for a little bit, and their whole backstory was that there was a cabal of elves that were a part of they were worshiping a Fey Prince, and in order to gain more favor with him, they hijacked the resurrection of a Deva. To then, basically raise that Deva to then sacrifice itself in a ritual sacrifice.
Huh.
The problem being was that the Deva was associated with a god who the Fey Prince was a worshiper and servant of. So he killed all the warlocks, and then formed a pact with this Deva, who, because she was kind of like hijacked out of her proper resurrection, instead of being, you know, 6 foot tall, a huge winged Deva, ended up being 5 feet. And they sent her on her way. I want to play that character again. I didn't get enough time to really flesh her out all that much, but
aww.
I like her a lot. I still, some of the art I did for it is some of my favorite art, because it's very, I don't know, Ghibli-esque.
I dig it.
Yeah. Actual question though. Goblins. It's goblins.
Gobbos are rad.
Yeah.
I like gobbos. For me, I'm not 100% certain.
You got rat people.
Yeah. Rat people. I think I'm going to go with rat people, honestly, yeah. Because I love me some Skaven, and I love me some Skrit, and yeah.
We talked about bug people last time.
True.
Imagine if you had a small-sized bug race, and they were beetle people.
Yeah.
And you could just make, like, you could still make them, like, hulking strong, like, make them all based off like pincer beetles,
yeah, and Hercules beetles,
and Hercules beetles and stag beetles and that kind of stuff. And just have them be like tiny little powerhouses.
That's a really, really good idea.
Yeah.
Somebody please run that. You don't even have to tell us about it, but just run it for posterity's sake.
Yes.
All right. I mean, the traditional question, we've covered it before, but like, are reptile or are kobolds and dragons reptiles?
I think that largely goes off how you want to run them.
Yes.
Rules as written, or setting as written in D&D, they are not reptiles. They are a different class of animal.
Yes, they are dragons.
Yes, they're dragons. They're draconic.
They are their own kingdom. Ha.
Yeah. If you are going off of something a little more real world based, like if you're playing like King Arthur Pendragon or something, they're demons.
Yes.
they're literally embodiments of human sin.
I'm okay with this.
Yeah. If you're going off of, and then, I mean, you have stuff like drakes, which are kind of up in the air when they're dragons, or if they're reptilian. Usually, it kind of seems like they lean more reptilian.
They do, because they're more like feralish.
Yeah, same with wyverns and worms and that kind of stuff.
I have a friend who refuses to pronounce it properly. He even spells it wyrven.
Like, I'm fine. Like, wyvern, I think, and honestly, I think wyvern sounds a little bit better.
Yeah, I'm okay with that, yeah. But wyrven.
Wyrven.
Like, I get so mad at him.
Maybe if you're doing a Sean Connery impression, if you're a wyrven.
Damn it.
But yeah, I mean, I've seen like strong cases made for saying that dragons are mammalian, reptilian. Yes. Amphibians, you know,
right.
100 different things, birds.
Honestly, they can be whatever the hell you want.
Yeah.
For your setting, do what you want.
Yeah. I like just making them, I mean, if they're going to be intelligent, I like just making them their own class of thing.
I agree.
And if they're going to be more bestial, I kind of like making them more reptilian.
If they're going to be more bestial, I like a mix of reptilian and bird-like, honestly.
Yeah.
Because that just feels right. It feels foreign. As an offshoot of that, actually, but a completely separate question, what happens when a dragonborn and a kobold make an egg? A very small dragonborn or a big kobold?
Okay, so I feel like there's a lot of variables that go into this.
There are.
The caveat being, if a dragon is making this happen, God knows fucking anything.
Yeah.
But beyond that, I would be hesitant to say that they could breed at all, but I know you're a big proponent that because they're both, draconic species,
right.
That means that they have a degree of wibbly wobbliness to them.
Genetic viability. Yeah.
I feel like, my biggest issues, pretty much come down to, I feel like it's not a problem on Dragonborn part, because Dragonborn are so hugely varied.
Yes.
But kobolds are usually depicted as kind of like very, very similar.
Yeah.
Like, you don't see a huge amount of variance. The most variance you see is whether or not winged kobolds exist in a setting or not.
Right.
So I feel like it could happen. Mm-hmm. I would, if I were, you know, sitting down writing a weird insetting biological treatise on it, I would probably rule that it's possible, but very improbable.
Okay.
Sort of like, you know, trying to breed horses and donkeys and that kind of thing.
Right. Technically it happens.
Lions and tigers, you know.
Sometimes.
Yeah. It can happen. But I mean, it's your fucking game. Do whatever you want.
I like the idea that it would be far more likely in a dragon-blooded kobold. You know, the kobold sorcerers that have dragon blood in them.
Yeah.
I feel like that would be, you know, a sort of a catalyst for it, as it were. Just because dragon fuckery, literally. Yeah.
And in general, I tend to not like a huge amount of half races running around just because mechanically it's weird. And then when you start thinking of, like, when you start broaching the question of, oh, well, I'm an eighth orc and an eighth elf and, like, and, like, half, like, dwarf. And it's at a certain point, it becomes too much. And, you know, you have to start considering, well, if you had a society where all of these creatures are interbreeding so regularly and succeeding at it, you should probably just consider them all one race at that point.
Right.
Yeah. And that's, again, kind of where you get into the complications of using race as a term.
Yeah.
Because I know there's been blowback about that. And rightfully so. There's a lot of good critiques about using that term.
I do sometimes ponder that myself.
Yeah.
And I'm not one to ponder these things.
Yeah. I think an important thing is that to make race work as a term used in something like this, you have to acknowledge that, one, it is a social construct. It's not like species, which is even barely a thing, or culture, which is a completely separate thing.
Yeah.
It's the, like, complete, total, and utter, like, context of ethnicity, culture, history, geography, a ton of different things coming together.
Right.
And if you're gonna have a society that's all, like, you know, quarter dwarves and half dragon and whatever, then just call them one thing, because, you know, you're gonna have the variance from one individual to another is gonna be represented in the randomness that you make your character be.
Right.
I mean, if you can have a dwarf with 12 strength and a dwarf with 20 strength, then, I mean, fucking whatever.
So basically the takeaway is really do whatever you want.
Yes.
Because even just between us, we have wildly differing views on this.
Yeah. The other thing comes down to if you ever have to ask the question, is someone going to get pregnant or not? Biological percentages is the least of your problems in that. That should be a talk out of character between the players and how you want the story to go.
Yep. That's not a look at this graph thing.
Yeah. That's a, do we want to include pregnancy? Do we want to have childbirth in this game? And, like, you know, if you're doing I really, really want to put, like, I don't know how much I've talked about on the podcast, but I am obsessed with King Arthur Pendragon now.
A little bit.
And I've always wanted to play a generational game.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, in that, like, in a game like that, you know, it is important. Like, oh, well, this orc got together with this elf, and then, you know, I'm playing as the orc. Well, now I'm going to play as their kid 10 years from now, kind of thing. And that's when, you know, stuff like that can be, you know, good and help a game go. But,
right.
If you're just having your players roll for shits and giggles, like, you know, maybe consider why you're doing that.
Yeah, honestly, yeah. Far be it from me to say this, but just be mature about it.
Yeah.
That's the last of the questions I've got.
Okay. Time for some questions from Tumblr.
Woo!
Good friend of the show, Roy, Fuck Warlock, asks, this isn't an ask, this is a demand. Talk about unicorns just a little for me, I'm begging you.
If there was ever a time for us to talk about unicorns, it's now.
Okay, so here's the thing about unicorns. If we're going to do a short folklore bit, unicorns started out, I know that everyone's like, oh, unicorns are these beautiful, precious things, and teen girls love them. And that's fine, you know.
Yeah.
I definitely, the modern unicorn is a lovable thing. Traditional unicorns are ugly, hideous goat horses. With beards and, like, big horns, and they kill people all the time.
They're basically rhinoceri.
Yeah, they're the entire association that they have with girls is basically the one thing that you could use to calm a unicorn, to then slay the unicorn, is they would become calm and enraptured with virgin girls.
Hmm.
And it is widely believed that this was used, kind of in stories as a cover as to why a pure young girl and a chivalrous noble would go out to the woods together alone for like several days.
Christ! I'm learning a lot today.
Yeah. But then also, I guess this thing called The Last Unicorn happened, and suddenly unicorn, and Lisa Frank, and suddenly unicorns are these beautiful, wonderful creatures. I don't know. I don't, like, I know, Roy, I know you really like unicorns, but I don't care about unicorns, and they've never really struck me as anything having a culture, hence why we've never talked about the show. But I mean, they're a cool kind of fey creature to throw in.
Yeah.
You can use them kind of similarly to how Kirin are used in Asian folklore as being kind of like heralds and signs of you know, destiny and good omens and that kind of thing.
Certainly, certainly. And I mean, they've been widely used in just about everything.
Yeah.
Like, I've always favored their representation in Final Fantasy because they always have like really cool unicorn-based enemies. Yeah. But yeah, no, it's...
Also, and I'm saying this completely unironically, like, fucking My Little Pony, I'm sure that whatever... I've come so far away from caring about anything at all. I mean, I don't even really feel like looking it up, but I know that, like the terrestrial ponies and the Pegasus ponies have like different cultures. I'm sure that the unicorns are like wizards or something.
Yeah, they are.
Okay, all right. Fucking, they got horns and shit, man.
Yeah. Yep. They're the only ones with really good fine motor control.
They have hooves.
But they had telekinesis.
Oh, okay. Well, there you go. That'll do it. An anonymous question. This person just started listening. They've been going through it chronologically. And they're a huge fan of D&D. Their DM loves using monster races as general citizens. Fucking great. Love your DM.
110%. Give them some love from us.
Yes. They just have one question. They got to the Dryad episode. And we're disappointed that we didn't cover Silvari, because they love Silvari.
Oh, shit.
The reason we didn't cover Silvari is because I've only played Guild Wars for about 30 minutes, and it was Guild Wars 1.
I devoted a lot of time to Guild Wars 2, so I have no excuse.
Silvari are cool.
Yeah.
It's nice to see, like, a Dryad race as a main race in a game.
Yes.
But
even if they are the Elfex beast.
Yeah, I mean, the frustrating thing about them is that they're WoW night elves with a foliage veneer.
Yeah.
And they do have a lot of, like, cool, like, different takes on that. I mean, the fact that they're... agnostic and more like rationale science based is kind of a really interesting direction to take a foresty magical fey kind of creature.
Yeah, especially with a very obvious magical link to a like almost a pseudo god esque plant
tree. Big old tree. Here's two statements. Well, I guess we'll start with one statement that'll bring the other thing up, but. You know, I think the big debate would be, are Silvari elves or are Silvari dryads? And I feel like definitely the evidence weighs more towards dryads.
Yes.
They have tropes and trappings of elves. Here's the thing, though. They're constructs.
Do tell.
So, Silvari, one, they're made by this big, giant, holy, pale tree.
Yes.
They have no way to reproduce. So, right. they're just made.
Yes.
They come out fully formed.
Mm-hmm.
They're mostly learned, but then they accrue more knowledge as they age.
Yes.
They don't die. I mean, well, they don't die of old age. They right. can be killed or poisoned or whatever, but yeah, they don't they don't age at all, et cetera, et cetera.
Yep.
It's basically just like, you know, wrapping some leaves around a twig. Also, if you look at their character models without any like equipment on,
yep.
One, they have flesh clothes, which I hate.
They do.
Yeah.
And it honestly looks like cabbage.
Yeah. I mean, and two, if you look at the rear of them, they've got this weird tail thing that's like halfway between a tail and like tied up apron straps.
Exactly. Where
you would think, oh, like, you know, well, if I turn this around and I kind of like examine this character model and kind of play back and forth, it's going to be like, oh, it's the thing that it's supposed to look like their underwear is tied up or something. No, it's just like their whole front like torso leaf flesh just like tied at the back. They're all flesh clothes.
Yeah.
Top to bottom flesh clothes.
It's so weird.
Like, how many layers on this onion do I have to peel to get to the meat boy underneath this Silvari?
God. Oh, no.
How many cabbage leaves do I have to tear off before I find the little Mandragora piloting this woody robo-man?
Plant mecha. God, now see, all I can think of now is like that corgi tearing apart that cabbage.
Yeah, Char tearing apart a safari. Yeah,
exactly. That's exactly it.
Ah. Dogs eating cabbage is maybe one of my favorite things in the world.
It's really good. Yeah. But in all seriousness, I do like the Silvari. I never played one, but it was always a joy seeing them because they were just like, they were sometimes just the only spot of color in the entire Char territories.
Yeah.
And it was just, they're really neat. They're fairly unique, again, for being like elf XPs. They're really unique, and I like them a lot.
It's one of those things where if you were to just say, okay, these are elves, but they're leaf elves, they're like already 10 times more interesting than what goes into the majority of elf thought.
Yeah, like...
And this is from a guy who likes elves.
I mean, yeah, like, legit, you've got wood elves, which are basically leaf elves, but human, and it's like, huh, this could be better. And then they made it better. They made it a lot better.
I don't know. I feel like I'm a lot more happy with Silvari when I'm thinking them as basically animated cabbages, as opposed to actual, like, you know, plant creatures that have been seeded and grown or whatever.
Yeah.
Like, they're just, it's a good old Nappa robot.
I like it. I like it a lot, actually.
Let's see. Next up, anonymous question ask. What if more chill liches were amazing sources for dating advice? Seeing as they've lived so long, they've probably been through a lot of partners. Some liches could even do couples therapy.
That's a direction I never would have taken it. I like that a lot. I feel like that's actually pretty spot on. Like, any lich who's not blatantly ultra evil would probably, you know, have people that hang around them.
I feel like, you know, just because they've lived forever and they've had multiple partners doesn't necessarily make a lich automatically have the credentials to be a couples therapist or to give good dating advice.
True.
Because for every, you know, wizened old lich who's had many loves and many, many good relationships in their unlife, I'm sure there's plenty of liches who, the minute, you know, the adventurer lieutenant brings up any kind of commitment, they just kind of, like, you know, cloud kill their body and go back to wherever their phylactery is hidden and just start a new life someplace else. Just, you know, ghosting, and then suddenly 10 years later they are working at the same school and they get fired and...
God damn. I mean, you're right. I can't actually object to that. That's probably true. One doesn't become a lich because you're ready for certain things.
Yes. I mean, yeah. Buddy.
But I feel like there would at least be a few cases in which having a lich friend would be a wonderful source of, hey, should I do this or this?
Yeah. I also feel like liches don't necessarily show the best the best ability to learn, to be honest.
Yeah. You're right.
I mean, they're still putting their soul into a phylactery to this day instead of splitting it into, like, you know, 8,000 doves or something.
7 near indestructible items.
Yeah.
That sort of thing.
Or taking their phylactery and firing it into space.
That would work perfectly once.
Although all it takes is one punk prince to come and, you know, send his girlfriend to fall in love with, or for you to fall in love with, to get all the information to find out, you know, the island that your phylactery is buried inside of a chicken, inside of a chest in the heart of a volcano.
Yes. It's a needle inside a duck egg.
Yeah.
But yeah, no, I like the idea of wizened old, you know, helpful liches.
I guess now we're getting to things that I don't know if we've mentioned on the show yet.
Mm-hmm.
And they're sitting in the inbox, so I guess we haven't, like, replied to them.
Right.
So we can just go through them.
Why not?
Yeah. Anonymous listener, listening to your podcast filled my Spelljammer-ready pirate lesbian commune with a couple dozen monstrous gals, and I can't thank you two enough for making the Minotaur nap room a possibility.
Okay, I remember talking about this one.
Yes. God. Spelljammer...
is
pirate, monstrous, lesbians. I just... there's so many good things in that concept.
It's... there's no way you can go wrong.
This is right up there with my idea for a Twitch stream role-playing game, which is Planar Gay Love Boat. suffice it to say, it would be a dungeon crawl classics game where the character creation funnel is all the characters are on a gay space cruise and the cruise ship crashes into an elemental plane of evil.
That, wow.
It would be run as a traditional American reality competition show where if you, at the end of a session, the audience would vote and whoever wins gets immunity from death for the next session.
You would have to.
Yeah. Oh, man. God. That's a plan for if I ever can actually run that kind of game ever in my life and have a following to put it on a Twitch stream. Another anonymous ask, I don't know a lot about the subject, but maybe have tieflings being based off imps. Imps are a devil. They could definitely have a tiefling. Absolutely. They would be the assholes of the plains.
And I like that a lot. I feel like taking actual devil types and using that for tieflings like we covered before.
Yeah.
Perfect.
I kind of like them as being, you know, not like halfling short, but like in the 5'4", 5'6" kind of range, like just a little bit short.
Yeah.
Give them some give them cartoonish like wings and like a little tail with a spade on the end.
Yes.
And just have them be assholes.
I agree wholeheartedly. I think it's a great idea. Here's one that I just got.
Okay.
What happens if a beholder looks at another beholder at the same time?
With which eye?
I'm assuming the anti-magic eye.
The anti-magic eye? They fall to the floor and start rolling around. Well, that's probably a supernatural ability, or maybe they have, like, gas bladders or something.
I want to say that they're floating as psionic.
That would make sense.
Like, I'm not certain of it, but it makes sense.
Are psionics not affected by any magic fields
they
in
are not.
Third edition? Okay, well, that's...
psionics are a spell-like ability.
Okay, yeah, God, they're broken.
Yes.
So with the anti-magic eye, as long as, you know, they don't have, like, an enchantment running to hold their body together because they got cut up 8,000 times by a fucking, you know, vorpal blade or something.
Yeah.
I'm sure they just get mad at each other.
Basically, I'm pretty sure that they'll just end up, like, ramming each other at that point.
Yeah. I mean, oh god, that would be a really cool short story to read, though.
Yeah,
have with two beholders that each have an eye stalk that just has power word kill on it, and they're just basically doing a cat and mouse sniper battle to try and see the other one without the other one seeing them.
Yeah, I really think it's all based on whose lair they're in, because the one whose lair it is far more likely to win that one.
What if their lairs were butted up against each other?
Ooh.
Like, I'm talking some, like...
literally line in the sand shit?
Like, some plainer Leningrad shit.
Oh, that'd be something.
Yeah.
God, I really love the idea of them just, like, having to sit and stare at each other. Because the moment either of them gets even a slight bit out of that cone, they're fucked. Or the other one is fucked.
Oh, God, yeah, I didn't even think about that. Yeah, they basically have to keep their main eye on, and they're just constantly, like, dogfighting and trying to juke each other. It's like watching two Olympic bicyclists, like, do the first three laps, and then, like, there's the last lap where they suddenly just start racing all out.
Yep. Yeah, it would, oh my god, that'd be something. Like, if there was ever a way to kill a beholder, that's a good one. You just get them fighting each other, and then wait.
So, yeah, that is our Q&A episode. No more questions. Forever. You guys missed your shit. No. So, we're going to be doing our third and final Kobolds episode.
Yep.
Next time.
Yep.
So, if you have any other questions, we'll be more than happy to answer them in that one. And then, I guess, after that, we've got Knowles. And unless anything else comes up.
That will be it.
Yeah.
That'll be our farewell episode.
Yeah.
Nice to know ya.
There we go. But yeah, it's been so great making the show with you.
You too, dude. Yeah. Holy shit.
We appreciate anytime anyone reaches out about the show, it is always just the best.
It has made me incredibly happy just to see the upwelling of appreciation and new thoughts and ideas and settings that you guys have come up with.
Yeah.
It has been nothing but an absolute pleasure.
Yeah.
So, since this is a Halloween episode, what is your favorite candy bar? And what do you think is a favorite candy bar of your favorite monster?
Okay, so my favorite candy bar is just a regular... Well, Oh, man, this is... God. I mean, there's Milk Boy.
Milk Boy?
Milk Boy. Milk Boy is a Swiss brand of chocolate.
Oh.
And they their flavors are pretty hit or miss for me. Like, they have like a pine flavored one that literally just tastes like pine saw.
That would kill my brother.
But they have a ginger lemon one that's just really, really good. Like,
that sounds interesting.
They're probably the best like milk chocolate I've ever had.
Wow.
But I think my absolute favorite chocolate bar would be I want to say it's Vazga's. Let me look it up real quick. What is that fucking... I can't remember the name of the chocolate company. I want to say it's Vazga's. Is they have a dark chocolate caramel truffle made with Hawaiian black sea salt.
Ooh.
And god, that is... Ooh. So good.
That sounds pretty good, and I don't even like dark chocolate.
And probably, it's a trashy candy bar, but right after that, it would be Chihuahua makes a candy bar with a very small amount of spicy pepper in it, but it's just, like, chock full of Pop Rocks.
That sounds pretty cool, actually.
Yeah, it's like...
Not my dick for spice.
But. It's basically the it's barely noticeable, like, beyond the Pop Rocks. It just gives a slight kind of warming quality to the chocolate as the Pop Rocks are going off.
That sounds perfect.
So they call it their... It's like the Chihuahua, like, firecracker or something.
I like that.
What is my favorite... Shit. What is my favorite... Fuck. Okay, so I guess I'm going to go with crab people. And I'm going to say that they just eat whole raw coffee beans off the beach, motherfucker.
I respect that.
None of this bar shit. They're just eating whole cocoa beans. Just whole nibs.
I respect that. Yeah. That is... I get that. All right. As for mine, my personal favorite has to be Hershey's Cookies and Cream Bars.
Okay.
Always has been. Just that little crunch with the white chocolate. White chocolate's my favorite anyway.
Yeah.
But just that little crunch of, like, the pseudo-Oreo stuff in it, it's perfect. And,
what kind of candy bar did Knowles eat?
Honestly, I think it's basically whatever the fuck they happen to find. However...
I can get really, really gross for a second.
Go for it.
Have you ever been in, a room from somebody who doesn't bathe too regularly, so they're gonna get pretty sweaty?